You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show. Man, what a treat. Hide and Seek Jill Hutchinson Collins, homegirl out of Pontchartrain Park. Yes, indeed, man. One of the top African-American, one of the top novelists in America here for this literary takeover, man. So don't forget, man, let's support our African-American writers and creators and artisans. And Jill Collins is just that. And this is O.T. and Jackson Slade. Jackson. Jackson Slade is one of the strong characters in her book. And, of course, her murder mystery series that also gives you a look and perspective to look into New Orleans. I love that, combining history with mystery, with drama, with lust, with love, with murder. As long as it's in the book, because we know we got too much murder.
Oh, Jeff Simons. Oh, my goodness.
Lord, and hold on, wait, before I get into you and your agenda, man, let me get to what I have to do, man. I'm looking at Essence Festival presented by Coca-Cola, Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Ooh. Two great seats. Ooh, my goodness.
How do I get those?
Second row, seat 12. Essence Festival. We're going to be giving away these tickets during the show, so tune in and weigh in. But back to Mr. Think 504, one of the most anticipated segments that do, one of the most popular segments we do with you. First of all, thank you for what you do with your blog, whether it's love, relationships, or politics, crime, or our 45th president.
Oh, yeah.
The articles are provocative, right on, and informative. So thank you for committing. I know you have your own business, your own family, your own life, but you keep us informed. Jeff Thomas.
Thank you, OT, for having me, man. I got to tell you, New Orleans, I need double my pay this morning. Sound a little scratchy.
You were a victim of this crime. They talk about opioid proliferation.
Oh, man, something happened.
Crime wave. Last night you attended the welcome party given by
Cedric Richmond.
I don't know. I might want to be mad at the congressman. Last year I was one of the hosts.
I didn't see you.
And he didn't call me.
Come on.
He didn't call. No, I was invited. I'm always invited, man. It's my little brother. But last year I was one of the hosts, MCs. Yeah. And this year I wasn't, but that's all right. You know, I was babysitting.
There you go.
I'm an old man with a young family.
but
let's talk about this. Crime has even spilled over to you. You were up all night.
All night. So, like I said, I need double my pay because I'm literally operating on 2 hours sleep. And if I sound a little scratchy, it's because I went to the congressman's party, mm-hmm. which if you go to Think 504, we had the top 10 things people mm-hmm. can do at Essence mm-hmm. this year. And that was number one. I think that's the biggest
party. It's a great party. Welcome party.
Baddest party in the city of New Orleans. It's a who's who.
It's too crowded? Too crowded at times?
It gets that way, but this year they regulated the crowd.
Good.
10 people left, 10 more came in. And it really wasn't like it has been in the past. Right. Overcrowded. It was a nice crowd. Good. And so, but I thought, hey man, I told everybody that's what I said. Listen, I'm leaving at 11:30. I don't care what happens because I got to go prepare and get my rest to go talk with Olive in the morning, be on the radio, get across this river and all this kind of stuff. And so, I was having a little fun, so I left like around 12 and walked to the truck and get in the truck and said, why? I didn't leave the window down. Oh, my goodness, it's smashed and broken.
Wow. You didn't leave. Somebody rolled it down. Somebody knocked it down.
For you. Yeah, man. So, they stole my stepdaughter's purse, and so she had keys. Her little girlfriend was with her who had her keys in her
purse. But what the crazy thing about that is, Jeff Thomas? This is we're in a studio now with Jeff Thomas, the publisher and editor of Think504.com.
Yeah.
Every year the congressman gives this annual party. People come from all over the world.
Yeah.
Dignitaries, other
I saw Reverend Al.
Other elected officials.
Housewives of Atlanta, people.
Celebrities, athletes, entertainers.
Right.
It seems like we would know that we definitely got a security up.
Yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Lock up that area.
Patrol it. Yeah. Now, I got to admit, I parked kind of far away. It was about a 5-block walk. But I mean, it's certainly it's downtown.
Not
New
that
Orleans.
That mean anything. Well, that's means right. anything in New Orleans.
That's right.
Because now these fools don't. These fools right. will smile in the camera
right.
and hit you over your head.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You, hey. You hey. I want list. You to watch me right. hit this man upside his head.
That's right. That's right. It was. Yeah. That video of those four young boys.
You're definitely laughing, but it's not. It's not.
Let me
it's
tell
not
you.
Funny.
Let me tell you. I'm going to be severely inconvenienced.
You've been violated.
Yeah,
man.
You know, you feel that way. It's yeah. a horrible experience. And then you know you have to wait for the police. And I started thinking, you know, are the police even going to come out for a car burglary at, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the
Not
morning?
Not right away.
Yeah, well, I got to be honest. So I thought that. And I thought, man, I'm just going home. But then I said, this is downtown New Orleans. This is the tourist district. They're going to come. And truthfully, what happened was, you know, we called the NOPD, and about an hour went by. And so I'm sitting here seething, thinking, man, I can't believe I'm going through this. I can't believe this foolishness has happened. And then afterwards, so called 911 back, and they said, well, you know, we can't give you an ETA, but, you know, the police have been dispatched, and an officer is going to come. And so about another 30 minutes went by, and so the police, I called the district station. And, you know, I had a real young brother who answered the phone and said, wait, let me check. He right. was helpful. And he said, yeah, you know what? We got somebody. They should be there rolling up within 5 minutes or so. And sure enough, 2 or 3 minutes later, bam.
Did they know it was you?
No. Well, no, yeah, because they wouldn't have come. Right?
No. I mean, they knew it was you.
Right.
And they didn't. That's actually a good
didn't.
Sign.
Right, right. And so, really no, they didn't. Know it was me. I didn't right. say, you know, it's Jeff Thomas.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, right.
No, no. Okay. And so not that that would have made a difference. But then
it would have.
two young white officers showed up. And let me tell you, these guys were professional.
That's excellent.
They were courteous. They did a thorough job. They dusted footprints. And then, you know, my daughter's friend had a beacon on her key because her keys were in my stepdaughter's purse, and so we were using the phone app, and we were parked right next to a hotel, right. and the app was saying the keys were in the hotel, and so you know I was talking to the officers about that. They said, "Man, we don't really trust that technology, that kind of stuff, because one time in the past, you know, it said it was right here. We followed it, and it wound up being 15 miles away. I don't know." But so I walked to the hotel myself,
right.
and I talked to the hotel security, and so we kind of tracked it to a couple of rooms. And so then I went back to the officers, and I said, listen, I know you guys aren't feeling this technology thing, right.
but.
And I said, we got to track down to a couple of rooms.
Right.
And so he said, what? Well, let's go. So they rolled around. Let me tell you, these guys, you know, could have easily just written the report and,
right.
and gone to the next call.
Well, what are they supposed to do their job?
But, and they did. They did.
Follow the lead.
They did. And so, you know, they actually went knocking on doors in the hotel. You know, at this point, it's like 2 something in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, my goodness, do I really want to be inconveniencing these
Talking
people?
About Jill Collins, hide and seek.
A
mystery novel. Right. You had a mystery night.
So it was these two rooms. I'll just say 20 and 21. And so on 21, the person came, a lady said, hello, can I help you? And he said, hey, Officer Adams and Sanders, NOPD, we'd like to talk to you about a key that was, it's found like it's missing, and it looks like it might be in this room. And so a guy came to the door. They didn't know, these people did not open the door.
Right.
He said, can we come in and talk to you? And the guy said, can we talk to you through the door?
We in New Orleans, we heard about y'all.
Right. But then next door, the other lady opened her door and said, what's going on? Is something happening here? You know,
right.
And you know, we explained the situation. She said, no, we've been in our room all night. We didn't know anything.
Right.
And so the other guy said, no, we didn't find the key. But so it was, and then we went up. It could have been the beacon, could have been the first floor or the second floor.
Yeah, right.
Went on the second floor, knocked, and nobody answered the door. So, right. you know, long story short, we didn't find
those keys.
Didn't find her purse, her wallet, her credit cards, her checkbook, that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's the inconvenience. That's life in the fast lane, life in the big city.
Life
right?
in the big city, life that's in New right. Orleans. Well, first of all, we're sorry to hear that, you were a victim.
I'm crying now. I don't want. I'm not a victim, OT. I am.
504-260-9260. We have a whole lot of other stuff to talk about, but right. It's just major irony.
Yeah.
That, you know, happen to you.
The guy who says, you know, listen, you know, crime is not a big problem, or the crime is a problem, but, you know, we don't need more police, you know.
I think we need more police, but we're going to talk about that. Think we don't.
Right.
And I used to agree with you.
Right. You would think I wouldn't
line
anymore.
Right? Line one, Brother Al, you're on with Jeff Thomas.
Hey, Jeff, listen, what's bro, there? Are you there Franklin Avenue Baptist Church the last time we had that Brother Joy and all?
Yes.
Did I tell you I called 911 in a serious thing in my neighborhood and it took him an hour to come? 911. So he was blessed because I'm telling people who are coming here, watch yourself, watch your back. But the safest place is going to be to stay on Porgia and stay on Canal Street. Mm-hmm. The rest of the city will be under siege because there ain't going to be no police. Trust me.
Wow, that's unfortunate. Thank you, Big Al, hear that. I hope not because, you know, look, I got friends coming in town.
Man, me
talked
too.
To one of my buddies the other day, coming out, some of my ex-teammates from college. Mm. And we're looking to have a good time, man. Yeah. I'm not going to walk around my town.
Right.
Scary. I'm going to be
for
cautious.
Real. For real. For real.
I'm going to be smart.
And even though that happened
I'm not going to walk around my town scary. It can happen anywhere in America.
Right.
You know,
right.
Anywhere in the world today. I'm going to enjoy this weekend.
Right. You know, I mean, statistically, crime happens everywhere. And you can't be a victim. You can't be a guy who's looking over
his
shoulder.
I'm more concerned about and more fearful in our neighborhoods.
Than
I am anywhere downtown.
That little petty crime last night, while a major inconvenience in my life, got to get, you know, new window and maybe some body work because it's scratched up, the kind of stuff. That's easily repaired.
Let's talk about something that you've been writing and thinking about and doing some homework and some study on. And it kind of goes in line with something my father used to say, the way he raised us. He used to always tell us about not feeling inferior.
Right. Right.
He would stress that time and time again. Me,
yes,
and my
sir.
Brother, and my sisters, is
yes,
that
sir.
Inferiority complex.
Yes, sir.
You know, and you have done your research and coined this phrase, black inferiority.
Yes, sir.
Complex.
You remember I can't remember the name of the comedian, but it used to be, you might be a redneck if you do these things. And, you know.
About Dave Chappelle?
No, not Dave. No, it wasn't Dave Chappelle. It's a
white guy?
Yeah, one of those country comics.
Yeah, country comics.
He's funny.
Was
you know,
good.
You might be a redneck if.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. If you got a red streak around your neck,
right,
you just might
be a redneck. That's him. Well, you know, one of the things is, I think that
if you call a black person boy and you really don't mean it,
right,
you just might
be a redneck.
No doubt about it.
But you know, listen. Here's the thing. Do you ever watch the news and hear about a crime and wish the perpetrator wasn't a black person?
Oh wait. No, look.
Right.
We be sitting there, man. Please don't make them black. It's like the DC sniper,
mm-hmm.
right? We
mm-hmm.
were like, please don't make them black.
Right. Do you feel bad like when those four
like
boys...
the serial killer up in Baton Rouge, Derek Todd Lee?
Yeah,
please don't make him black.
Well, that's shocking because that normally is a white person. But yeah, you know, but if you're happy if the criminals are white, if you feel bad
that's
in
real
general,
talk. That's real
right.
talk.
If you feel bad in general, if a black person commits a horrible crime, you might be suffering from an inferiority complex, a black inferiority complex.
Jeff Foxworthy is the comedian.
Jeff, that's him. Exactly right. Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Lil Bird. Early Bird.
Where's the Early Bird?
Early Bird knows everything.
Early Bird,
knows everything.
Come on.
Thing. This is funny, but it's not because each of us have found ourselves sitting in front of the television, reading a story. Mm-hmm. Hearing a news flash about crime, something heinous, something crazy, and the first thing we say is, please don't be black.
Right, exactly. And I'm suggesting to you that that's part of...
never thought about it.
It's part of being having an inferiority complex. And let me tell you, I have listed, I think, 7 or 8 factors of... You know, of an inferiority complex. What are the components that make up this notion of black inferiority? Mm-hmm. First thing I want to say this is that the notion of Black inferiority is as American as apple pie. The 4th mm-hmm. of July, Essence Festival, maybe not Essence mm-hmm. Fest, but it is ingrained in the culture of America. You know, white supremacy means black inferiority. Mm-hmm. We always talk about white supremacy, but let's talk a little bit about what it means, this black inferiority complex. And I want to say this to you, Oliver and Lee and everybody who's listening out there in New Orleans. Everybody who I'm looking at and everybody who's listening to me suffers from a black inferiority complex.
All of us. Hold on. Me too?
You too, sir. I'm sorry. Hey, brother. Not let me. They're different scales.
Yeah.
You know, and some of us have more inferiority than others.
Right.
But, and in fact, well, I'd like to maybe do a little exercise this morning.
Okay.
Let's go through. We're going to list a few, and you give yourself a rating of 1 to 5.
Well, let's play this role then. Let's go.
Okay. So 1 would be that's really not me, and 5 is really that really is me.
Okay.
So the first thing is, well, one of the factors is that you see yourself and others as black, as not as an individual.
I would have to say that's 8.5 or 9 because, when you made the comment, one of the problems is when we're hoping it's not black is that if one of our people are publicly do something or exposed to doing something, we feel like all of us are going to pay for it.
That's right. Well, listen.
Or be targeted.
That's right. It's because we view ourselves as part of a group,
right.
Part of a race.
This is a great exercise.
Right. Let me tell you something. Even if let's go into this a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you say, I'm black and I'm proud. You're suffering. This is a manifestation of your inferiority complex. Mm-hmm. If people sometimes say, that dude ain't black enough. You acting mm-hmm. white. That's a manifestation of mm-hmm. your black inferiority complex.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to fit into this black box. The problem is that it limits your individuality because it is in your individuality mm-hmm. that your greatness lies. It is where all of us have.
That's every piece, Jeff Thomas.
Well, let me tell you, we're making
So in many cases, we are forced into spending our spending so much time trying to identify and be part of the group that are you saying that it actually has an impact on our individuality?
It lessens our individual success. Absolutely correct.
That deserves a whole show, but that's a heavy piece.
Well, I'm telling you, listen, it's instead of reaching the greatness that are within
us. I'm going to ask Victor Sims and Dr. Eric Johnson about that.
Ask him.
Okay.
Let me tell you, and I promise you they're going to agree with me
because
your greatness lies within your individuality.
Gotcha.
We're all born.
Listen, man, we got to get through this list, man. So
I'm taking this test
because we never have enough time. We got to do 2 hours, nigga.
You're right.
Right.
All right, so the next one is, do you employ black professionals? Is your doctor white? Is your lawyer white? Do you want to send your kids to? Well, that's another one. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. When you hire a contractor, do you hire a white person or do you not feel as comfortable? You know, I often hear people say, I try to get my business to the black man, but you know how the black man do.
And one black man can mess it up for every other black man.
Because
now, you're making me think because I've heard restaurateurs, I've heard contractors,
mm-hmm.
I've heard lawyers say, you know, I got to have somebody, a white face.
Sure.
For my business.
Sure.
I gotta have a white waitress. I gotta have a white receptionist. I gotta have a white salesperson. Wow. I've actually heard black business people say that.
Sure. And it's because why is that?
Why?
Do you not hear it all the time?
Yeah.
I try to get my business.
I heard it yesterday.
Man, you know, you try to do business with our people. You know how our people are. That's a manifestation of this black inferiority complex that we deal with every day. And so this limits us, and this hurts our community. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, now we're gonna talk to another one. Now here's another one.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you live? You try to live. A lot of people move in white neighborhoods.
Uh-oh, now you're getting serious. You're casting aspersions.
I'm telling you the truth. They'll live in an apartment complex in a white neighborhood and pay more rent than the white folks.
We leave our neighborhoods get mad when white folks come back.
That's
to
right.
Because they're cheap. Because we didn't pay the taxes on grandmama and big mama. And we call it gentrification.
Right,
could have had it all along.
And we want to move out there in the suburbs. We got it backwards. Don't we have it twisted?
You're going to make some black people mad if you keep this
up. I'm sure they are going to be mad with me. but listen, we got to look at ourselves in a realistic way. And if we don't, we're going to keep suffering from this negative cloud that
Let's get to another one.
All right. Now, schooling. I talked about that almost. Mm-hmm. You send your kids to a white school. I'll give you a good example.
Oh, black folks say that. No, man. I'm going to send my child to a white school and brag about it. But they'll brag about going to St. O.
Let me tell you, man.
Man, I'm a proud Purple Knight.
Right.
I ain't sending my child.
My sons go to Rummel, though. Right. I was at a St. Aug Rummel basketball game, right? And I was sitting, there was a bunch of Rummel family people sitting around me. And I was like tripping. I was listening to them, and the lady said, "Well, you know, we're a little bit bougie. That's why we send our kids to Rummel." And I said, "That makes you bougie? Sending your kid to a white school where they don't have any identity, where they become an outsider looking in, where they have to fit in, where they can't be themselves. Listen,
They don't have Black History Month.
They don't have Black History Month. There's nothing wrong with white people. There's nothing
at all. But this is heavy. In many cases, we're blaming whites because we've given up our own control. There's a lot that we've given away in this conversation. Right. What's next?
Well, let me just say, part of black inferiority is this notion. White superiority means being black is valueless. Mm-hmm. And so when we buy into the notion, you know, that's why you hear people say the schools in New Orleans are bad. The schools, we have some problems in our educational system. We need to fix them. I don't think running to an all-white school is the answer. Diversity is the key, right? So, I'm not saying we should.
But if stronger parents and better parents and more engaged parents would take over the schools, then that would make it a better school. I'm seeing another side.
That's right. Okay. That's right. All right. Next one is one's a little sketchy for me, but I'll say, you know how you just did. Mm-hmm. In fact, you talk differently when you get around the white people.
Wait, pardon me?
Yes.
Hold on a second. First of all, top of the morning to you. I have to know where you're coming from.
Come on, bro. What you talking about, man?
Hey, man.
Neighborhood, that's the way you talk to me.
Look, you know
when
what?
When you go uptown. Now you uptown. He's uptown now.
Look,
Come on.
Oh, Jeff. Jeff Thomas, aren't you not the publisher?
Yes, I am.
Think504.com.
Yeah, well, who are you?
Such a great internet periodical.
Let me tell you. You jest. But, you know, I have friends who – let me just say this. You have to talk. You have to assimilate to the environment that you're in.
We understand that code switching,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but let me tell you, and being black means you're bilingual in America.
I know a sister that when white folk come around, she roll her R's so heavy she almost sounds Spanish.
Yeah, people have a white laugh. They laugh differently. So anyway, you know, that's part of the black inferiority complex.
That's a 9.5.
So everybody should be, you know, let's go back and say, rate yourself from 1 to 5.
Right. I hope you're rating yourself out there, listening audience. Yes,
because there's going to be, you'll know what level of inferiority you have at the end based on your score.
Because you're going to have to tell us your score to get these essence tickets.
That's right. Right. So the next one is when you're around white people, you try not to be aggressive. You try to be docile. You try to make white people comfortable.
Is everything okay, Bob?
Right. Well, you don't talk about black stuff.
No. Look.
In fact, you talk about how bad crime is, like I did this morning.
Everything is the same. You know, if you would just pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
There you go.
You know, we all have the power
to
accomplish the same thing.
It's us. We are the problem. Yes. Exactly right. Yes. And so if you try to make white people feel comfortable when you're around them, you might
and
be
go
suffering.
Out of your way.
And go out of your way to do it. Right. Now, I'm not saying, obviously, you're not going to make anybody uncomfortable intentionally. Right. But when you change who you are, when you change your belief system, when you change your approach, because you don't want the people that you're interacting with to view you as
that's a 9.9.
Right. Next. Right.
And
so the next one is you feel like an outsider when you're involved. You feel less comfortable, less confident if you're the only black person in the room.
You don't want to look them in the eye.
Yeah, you're immediately
you're looking for where other black people may be.
That's right. That's right.
You will cling to the servant.
Yes, sir.
Follow them around and ask them if they need help.
Right. You're the honored guest.
and you're the honoree. 504-260-9265. Wow.
Right.
This is,
right.
We got it. Let's go.
Line one.
Oh,
we got.
Miss Jones, you're on with MrThink504.com.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to everybody else.
Good morning, Miss Jones. Speaking
of which, you know, in business, black folks are the one who bring the business here, and it's not as bad. It's just, like you say, been brainwashed. Now, for example, you know, book writers, even in the past, maybe a couple of years ago, they've gone to everywhere but Vera's bookstore. And we cry, you know, she's in need of help. It's so sad.
Yeah, the decisions we make. Thank you, Ms. Jones. You're absolutely
she's
correct.
Right. Yeah, Ms. Jones
the decisions
always.
We make, where we go.
Right,
you know,
right. That's right. That's
where,
right.
Where we do business. Those things matter. And it's really, you seem to have very little control. Those things are subliminal.
Yes.
They're part of your subconscious.
Yes. Right.
They're ingrained. It's the power of white supremacy.
Exactly right.
It's the power of our need to want to be accepted and similar. Let's walk down this, man. This is a powerful piece, Jeff. We only have a couple more.
And one is, we talked about this early on, which is you feel responsible if a black person commits a crime or acts inappropriately. You feel embarrassed if, you know, a black person, if you're in a room with some white folks.
One size fits all for us.
And the black person comes in and says something inappropriate or says something bad. It's more than just, you know, this guy is inappropriate and you're embarrassed for him. You're embarrassed for yourself. Mm-hmm. You feel it because you feel like you're right. Because we have no identity. We are a racialized being in America. We are not individuals. Because of that, we're suffering from black inferiority.
Last one's one more.
Yeah. Well,
what do we got?
Is there another one which is overcome by understanding that you are afflicted by the same disease that all of us suffer? Recognize these factors and think about our response.
So how do you regulate your meter?
Right,
because there was some things here that I was 5.5.
Right. Sure.
And there were some things that I was 9.9.
Sure.
So how do we regulate that, and how do we begin to understand it? Because this is important.
Yeah,
and I am going to talk to Victor Sims about
it.
This.
It is. You should. What we have to do is recognize in those moments that we are in fact operating from that broken paradigm, from that devoid paradigm, from that paradigm of negativity.
Admit
it to ourselves and recognize it.
Okay.
And then we can take appropriate behavior. We can change. We can recognize. The most important thing that I want to say is that we are individuals. In America, we are racialized beings. We're not human beings. We're racialized beings. We lose our individuality. We lose our greatness.
I really want to walk down and research that subject. And like I said, not only am I going to talk to Victor Sims, I'm going to talk to a great New Orleanian Dr. Felton Earls, Harvard School of Global Medicine,
please do this. Please do.
This is a heavy piece in that losing, in many cases, we lose our individuality because white supremacy is either forced us or because of our own inferiority, we've forced ourselves to be part of the pack.
Well, that's right.
I very much want to agree with that, but I want to understand the science and the psychiatry of it.
And you should, and that would be great. And if I weren't operating on 2 hours sleep, I could give you that. But, you know, listen, I was the victim last night, man.
We're going to go to the lines right now, man. I really feel for you, man. You know,
I'm kidding. You're taking it well,
but you've been violated. You really have.
Yeah, well, I have.
Line one, Pastor Wallace, great man. You're on with Jeff Thomas.
Good morning, Mr. Thomas, and good morning to the listeners, to my Christian and religious brothers.
Hey, Pastor.
One thing I could say, brother, if that was the case, Jesus would be disappointed every time you come to church on Sunday morning. Because it's full of misfits and liars and folks that haven't lived up to what they pretend to be. So, but the gracious thing about that is God's grace is still sufficient in our weakness. But I want to say one thing. I heard some people chiming about the SNS. When you look at Willamette Chicken and all those places, Oliver, Lakes and Strips in the old days back in the
day,
black folks didn't have any kind of inroads. The lady that owned Restaurant Mason and all of those people, they worked amongst themselves and they worked in longshoremen, and their name got out because of the product that they put out. I don't care what you do. If you're giving your best and people see you giving your best effort and you got a product that's good, you'll be included anyway. I don't care where you go. And, you got second class white folks, just like you got, you know, that's what I love the commercial with the first class and the second class with a guy,
right. Well,
I'm gonna close the curtain on. all of us come from somewhere at the bottom, and we resonate to the top, and it's morally how we get to the top and ethically how we get to
the top.
And we have a standard. Mm-hmm. And, brother, you got where you at because you was raised right, you was taught right. You could do anything just like anybody else. You could have been the biggest fool in the world, the biggest clown, but you choose to do something more noble with your life like Oliver. We all make mistakes, but thank God for another chance and another chance and another chance. And we got to get away from that, you know, minimizing the small window.
Thank you.
Big world and the big life. Let's keep moving on. Keep pressing.
Thank you, Reverend. I've got good work, Marlon. God bless you. Started from the bottom, but I'm here.
That's right.
We're going to take a break. We got our callers. The lines are lit up, man.
I want to talk about how government deals with this black
Great topic,
inferiority.
But we're going to get to our callers. And then we got to spend some time talking about the political season.
It is upon us.
Jeff Thomas in the house, man. I'm going to say it. He was violated last night. Victim had been up all night fighting. Going to Cedric Richmond's welcome party, coming out to find his truck and items stolen from him and his family. Yeah. We'll be back after the break.
WBOK, 1230 AM, The People's Station.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show, Oliver O.T. Thomas. And yes, I'm looking at these two Essence tickets. Probably in about maybe a half hour, 45 minutes.
I can't get those tickets?
At least they might be in the next few. No, you can't.
I can't get the
No.
Can I just hold them?
You thought you got robbed last night. You thought you got robbed last night. You touched the listening audience tickets, and they'll be waiting outside of 1639 Gentilly Boulevard.
We're going to find Jeff Thomas.
Jeff Thomas. We probably won't be much longer. I think Lee says he's gonna give us a sign to start raffling off these tickets, man. Breaking news, man. Emin Kelly, man, the president of Tulane University. When I think about Emin Kelly, I think about Dr. Francis on that level.
That's right. Contemporaries.
On that level, same kind of individual.
That's right.
Emin Kelly, one of the great educators, former Tulane University president, a great human being, man. Somebody I really held in the highest esteem.
Same here. He pushed Tulane in terms of openness.
I remember the race seminar when Ron Mason was his counsel, man. The race and relationship stuff that he used to do, using university for community, the community scholarships that used to be given away.
Right.
Dr. Kelly, but didn't tout his own and blow his own horn.
That's right.
But great educator. We're going to miss one of the great educators of our time.
Yeah. He really pushed integration.
I know we're not going to have enough time because we got issues to talk about. We got the lines are lit up. We're going to go to the lines right now. Line two, Carl, you're on with Jeff Thomas.
Well, good morning, Arnold. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Hey, Carl.
Jeff really did a clinical analysis this morning.
That was heavy.
But I think Neely Fuller is the antidote for that.
Mm-hmm.
White supremacy.
Yeah.
Let's recognize that white supremacy is the main problem in our society today. We trying to be what we are not. It's difficult now. But if we be what we are called to be as a race and understand our culture and love ourselves, have our problems.
Yes.
There's also something called post-slavery disorder.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
You're right, Carl.
And, you know, I don't disagree with you at all. White supremacy.
You got a clinician and a behavior specialist to call in. He's impressed by your stuff. That's what he does for a living.
I thank him and I thank you. And you're right. White supremacy is the greatest problem in America. But white supremacy, the other side of that coin, is black inferiority.
Thank you, Carl. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
God bless you. Miss Eloise, you're on with Jeff Thomas. Miss Eloise, thank you so much for holding. You're on with Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Jeff. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning.
The young man took the word out of my mouth this morning. What about our black supremacy? What about our black Ku Klux Klansmen and mafia?
They were out there marching to keep the monuments up.
Sure. Well, that's part of being black. Black inferiority, Miss Eloise.
504. If we didn't have, if we haven't been identified as black Ku Klux Klansmen, I know you know now that Temple with your truck. We got that.
Yes.
I mean, right. Dave Chappelle, one of the great skits, Carlton Bigsby, his character that was
the blind,
his character that was the Black Klansman. That was funny, but that was a heavy piece of Miss Eloise.
Right, right. She's right. Yeah, and he was. That was funny. He was the blind man. I'm sorry, Miss Eloise.
It took me a while to learn that we have Black Klansmen as well as Caucasian Klansmen. Mm-hmm. We have some Black people that can sit in high places that can do some evil and unjust things.
Thank you.
People and believe nobody know who they are.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great point, Miss Eloise, and thank you. You're absolutely correct. We hadn't thought about it from that point, but Jeff and I are going to talk about that. Anything else you want to add?
I've been victimized just about all my life by Black supremacist people. Anything they do to you, they're okay.
Thank you.
So I'm going to leave it at that because I am a multiple victim by my own Black.
Wow. Thank you.
So, you know, I already know what's going on.
Yes, you do. Right. Well, you know, my mother used to have these conversations about similar and she would try to explain things. And I've talked about this before when you talk about race, especially in discrimination in our own community.
Right.
She says in many cases when that Black judge sees that Black defendant, he's so upset.
Right. His Black inferiority kicks in.
He's so mad that you messed it up for him because he did everything right.
That's right.
He's just as harsh. When that Black police officer encounters that Black suspect, he's so upset that this so-and-so is making it hard. When that Black politician, I'm thinking about some of the conversations from African American leaders who say those people.
That's right. Because listen, we are all afflicted by this Black inferiority complex. And you bring up, and it's a good time to segue into the fact that we have elected officials who suffer from this malaise. We have elected officials who implement rules and regulations in society who suffer from this malaise, which is why things like the mass incarceration of Black people, which is why this government of
Maxine Waters admitted that that was one of the biggest mistakes in her career was that when she went along with the crack laws.
Exactly right. And that's part of, you know, we get in this We get in this group and we don't want to make people feel uncomfortable. We talked about that. We want to, especially when we get into these power positions, sometimes we want to, we feel like we have arrived and we want to feel like we are part of the upper crust of society.
My father used to say that, when whites have money and power and influence, they use their money, power and influence. When Black have their money, power and influence, they go out of their way to show that they can be fair.
Exactly right. And that is an inferiority complex. That is a manifestation. That is, you see, part of white supremacy, part of this notion of white supremacy is white fragility. I encourage people to Google Robin DiAngelo, a professor who wrote a piece called defining and explaining what white fragility is. And a big part of white fragility, which is ingrained into white supremacy, is the notion of not having any racial discomfort. And so if anything that we bring to the table makes them feel uncomfortable, then they react negatively towards the person that they're dealing with. And so that's kind of what you're talking about when we see it. So what I'd like to do also right now is let's have our grading system. I hope people did, in fact, grade. And so if you go from if you could be from 25 to 35, if you add up your score. If you're in the 25 to 35 range, so Oliver, I know you had some nines and tens.
I'm going into the extreme. I'm going into therapy after the show.
He called Victor Sims. You need.
Yeah, I'm going to sit down with him.
Right, but seriously, folks out there, you know, if you graded yourself on each one of these, and we can go through them right quick. You don't trust the word of other Black people, especially Black professionals. You pay more rent to live in white neighborhoods. You send your kids to predominantly white schools, not diverse schools, predominantly white schools. You try to talk differently when you're around white people. You try to make whites comfortable when you're in there, when you're with them. And you feel like an outsider or less confident when you're the only one of the few Blacks in the room.
And if a crime is committed, you pray that they ain't Black.
Exactly right. So if you give yourself a 1 to 5 on any one of those, if you're in the 25 to 35 range, you have a high inferiority complex.
We're going to go to the lines right now. Larry, what's your number, bro?
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning,
Larry.
Listen, that theory has somewhat flaws to it because we're not monolithic. We know that.
That's right. The point.
That's exactly
now,
right.
Some, I call the brothers and sisters, especially the brothers out in the street doing a lot of crime, I call them Pookie Ray Rays.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember about a year or so when I asked the police chief, Warren Riley, who commits the crime? And he said about 7%, 7. Now, that's one digit.
Mm-hmm.
So what he said that, well, 90-something percent, what he was saying that 90% of them don't commit crime. Mm-hmm. So I usually try to get dallying information and be objective. I know some black folks that don't patronize nothing for white folks. We need some black folks that got money. They go to black doctors. After Katrina, they got black contractors. Everything is about patronizing our people. They got folks like that. So these people will get a zero. I mean, they have folks
them.
Like that. So
that's
I
right.
call these folks like they have consciousness, culture.
Whether there you
go. Inferior, they learn how to, be. In fact, if they have a problem, most of them, they think we're superior. If that's the problem, we think we're superior. So that concept doesn't apply. You know, I think that a lot of educated black folks and sometimes the people conscious folks call them bourgeoisies because they always want to win acceptance and approval from the dominant culture. So, you know, we're not all of the same. We got, we got some differences and we aren't monolithic and they do have black folks that don't suffer from what you say.
I agree with
Thank
you.
You.
Well, listen, that's why we're...
They got people out there, man, like
well, Larry,
that, man.
Larry, hear me, what we're talking about is we're saying that there's a scale that if you're on the 25 to 35 range, then you have a high... You could be on the 0 to 5 range and you're not at all inferior. That's part...
Yeah, but I'm saying is that you're saying we all... suffer from, and that's not the case.
Okay, well, I disagree with you, Larry.
I disagree, too.
From Marcus Garvey to Malcolm X, I mean, we had leaders right. that was all down with the cause.
Sure.
So,
sure.
You know, if you look through our history, you know, it's always been like that, man. Nat Turner, go ahead and check it out. So not all of us, but they do
right.
have a lot of us that, you okay. know, upheave to what you say.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
Maybe we painted with too broad of a brush. Maybe not every black person in the world.
Yeah, but you know, right. Two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles,
right.
onions.
On a sesame
seed bun
right,
which
right,
you've been
right.
programmed.
Sure, absolutely.
With, you know, what you thought, which is a subliminal subconscious.
Exactly right.
I always recommend to people to read The Master Key System by Charles O'Neill.
Sure.
The Power of Subliminal Thought and Suggestions. Advertising Doesn't Work. Or read The 48 Laws of Power by Green.
Sure.
You know, look, it works.
Absolutely.
They don't
Absolutely.
Pay $3 million for a 30-second ad at Super Bowl because it doesn't work.
And what you're talking about is the narrative bias that exists in America. And the narrative bias is that whites are superior, that blacks have an inferior, that blacks are in fact inferior, that whites have everything of value, that everything dealing with black people is of little to no value. This is the American narrative. This is not something that Jeff Thomas is thinking, making up. This is the society we live in.
This is our actions.
Right. And if Larry doesn't think that, then that's what we're talking about.
Right.
I'm talking about the narrative bias that exists in America that black people have little to no influence and value in this country. And so when we talk about laws, when we talk about how legislators write laws, when we have laws, let me back up and say this. This is part of the problem with American governance as it relates to black people. Black people have been the object of government. We haven't been we haven't gotten services from government. Although I got service last night by the NOPD, I want to thank them. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, most often we get fines, fees, and incarceration. That is the way government deals with African Americans.
It's usually a penalty.
Exactly right. There is a penalty.
When black people encounter government, it's usually a penalty.
Exactly right. Right. Exactly right. And so that's based on this notion of, you know, keeping black people in place, that they are of little value and they don't have anything of importance to say.
And let me say, that's why I'm taken aback and I keep mentioning it. The study that Eric Holder and the Justice Department did of Ferguson about what they found in that many cities in America, how if you go to municipal court and look at the lines,
black folks.
Even if you go to Jefferson Parish and look at the lines,
black folks. I was going to say if you go to Mandeville,
if you go to traffic court and look at the lines,
right. Black folks.
If you go to criminal court and look at the lines.
Black folks.
If you go to the revenue department, look at the lines.
Black folks. Exactly right.
So I am so surprised that academics and black intellectuals, especially with the university system, have really not dealt with that report from Erica Holder that shows how we'll never win, because even if we do well and move forward, government is used to, with fees and fines and penalties, to keep us down economically and socially.
Right. And that's been the approach of the current administration, and that is the reason. I mean, his reliance on hiring more police and not investing in our people is the reason that crime is out of control. We cannot arrest ourselves out of this problem. It's not a police problem. We have a lack of investment in black people, and it's because we have this notion that black people are inferior and not worthy of the investment of millions and millions of dollars. In fact, what government does is what you just talked about.
Take out of our community.
Instead of what government should be is servicing our community. Investing in our community.
Now, Jeff Thomas.
Yes, sir.
We've said a lot.
Yes, sir.
We're in the midst of municipal elections.
Oh, how about that? Yes,
right?
Sir.
You know, we see there are a lot of named candidates. For mayor, a clerk, city council. This is a good time for the citizens to show what their scale is.
In
terms of black inferiority.
Yeah, exactly right. And so we can, you know, we should. My friend, our friend Jacques sent me a text and said, you know, we should give the politicians this Negro test or this inferiority test.
That's what I'm saying. It's a time for everybody to take the test.
Exactly right. And so we need to know where you stand on the inferiority.
Well, first of all, we know they're failing.
Right.
Well, if you look at the resources, if you look at the disparity,
yes, sir.
If you look at the social science,
yes, sir.
If you look at mass incarceration,
yes, sir.
Then it's obvious to say that black elected officials, if you look at economics,
sure.
Black elected officials have failed if you give them just that test.
Exactly right. And that's part of the reason, I hear on your show all the time and you say how we need to get people involved. I think one of the main reasons people aren't involved in the electoral process and going out to vote is because they haven't been affected by government in a positive way.
All studies show that's true.
Right. Our elected officials don't deliver the goods. You know, they talk about, I'm going to solve the crime problem, and knowing that is virtually impossible.
Have you seen anything out of any of these candidates or platforms yet? I know as a writer and as editor of Think 504, look, people subscribe to think504.com, one of the most informative news sources that we have. Have you seen anything from any candidates now in terms of our community, its black inferiority? Are you like me, you're waiting?
I'm waiting. You know, the candidates are still fleshing out. I mean, qualifying hasn't even happened yet. Mm-hmm. And so when you go to their websites, it's still just
And who are the candidates right now? Who's out there?
Well, what are we talking? The mayor's race? Well,
yeah, mayor's race.
We know LaToya Cantrell, who's leading in the polls. We also have
Sidney Torres is still maybe. I think that's a ruse by him. I never believed that he was serious about running. I don't think he would risk it in terms of being able to talk about the issues.
Right.
I don't think he'd risk damaging his brand.
Right.
And I'll put my hand on the chopping block. He will not qualify for mayor.
I would be surprised.
He would not. For him, it's just about branding.
Right.
Branding, marketing.
Sure.
Money, name.
Exactly right.
Michael McNair.
Right. The former judge who ran against current mayor.
Back at it again?
Yeah. He is, I think, in single digits so far.
Desiree Charbonnet is out there.
Yeah, because, you know, that campaign, I think that they thought that
still
in kind of buzz,
still in single digits.
But all of these campaigns.
And now, Karen Carter is a name right now that keeps bubbling up.
It doesn't seem to go away. Yeah, she has the name recognition and has been around for long enough and has one of the leaders
of the state and the National Democratic Party.
Exactly right.
Tommy Vassell, the African-American accountant right now, man, one of the best accountants in this city, is looking at throwing his hat into the race.
You know, that's funny. Maybe that's why Tommy called me yesterday. He called me, but he had a personal emergency that came up and said he'd reach out to me later. So that, you know, I was wondering why Tommy was calling me.
Yeah.
I mean, normally he'd call me for some computer stuff, maybe my computer,
can't question his intellect and his smart. His
CPA.
Budgeting, yeah.
He's been a CPA, one of the first black CPAs.
To really get some notoriety.
Exactly
Bruno, Mike Bruno, Turbulon.
Yeah, exactly right. Those are great guys.
Spade.
Yeah, Luther, yes.
And sure. Vassell, Tommy Vassell.
Tommy, that's right. That's it. When you talk about black CPAs in America. And so, yeah, who we elect is going to be critical because all of these government agencies have tons, and when I say tons, I mean millions and billions of dollars.
And, Jeff, what we know now is that black chronic voters right now outnumber white chronic voters.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It's looking like we're going to get a black mayor unless they chop each other so bad up in
right.
the race.
Right.
But that doesn't seem likely. There's no great white hope.
There is none today.
Out there right
now. That's right.
And blacks
right.
seem to be, white business people seem to be resigned to the fact that the next mayor is going to be black.
Right. Well, now, I also hear Stacey Head is looking at
this. Well, she said at the Women's Forum at Goretti not too long ago, she wasn't closing the door, say never.
That's right. And so
the Leger campaign seems to have fizzled out. It just didn't catch on.
He didn't. Yeah. He was in lower than 1% in polling.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
it's hard to go from a small House seat to mayor of the city.
Right.
And he's had,
it's the challenge that judges have.
Exactly.
They don't
right.
realize it.
It's tough to make that transition. Even though as a judge you've run
citywide.
You think
people know you. Yeah.
And you think, in Desiree's case, she's been elected a couple of times. She's got to do a lot of branding out there. She's got a tough fight. It's an uphill
battle.
Now,
she's got a great political team. When you talk about purely a political team.
She's
coming with some political veterans.
So they've won citywide multiple times and she's their candidate. And they're teamed up and they're going to be a formidable contender.
Karen Carter jumps in the race. That creates a whole new shift.
That's a big splash
right.
and displaces a lot of water. And some candidates are going to go out with that water. Yeah, for them, unfortunately.
As you see the issues moving forward, we were talking about it offline. The Landry administration, as aggressive as they've been with infrastructure, they've had a hard time getting a lot of the infrastructure money,
right.
the sewage and water money, the billions of dollars. They've had a tough time getting it out on the street.
Right.
You're saying that billions and hundreds of millions of dollars is going to be left for the next mayor.
Exactly right. And it's going to be incumbent upon us to pick the right kind of mayor who's going to invest in our community. And I've identified six government agencies that have billions of dollars combined that should invest in training of our people. You talk all the time, and I did the last time I was here, about the convention center money.
The proposal that was submitted to the convention center
right.
to just use a couple million dollars to train for apprenticeships
exactly.
and skilled labor, that minimum investment could be parlayed 10 times over into $20, $30 million worth of investment into people and lives.
And let me say this to you. This is what people don't get. For every job, good high-paying job that we create, we don't need the police officers because crime goes down. And let me tell you, here is one key
That's a good comparison.
Right. Here's one key that people are not recognizing. You know who 90% of the criminals, one thing they have in common, 90%. Don't say they're black. 90% of criminals they do not own their homes. All right? So home ownership is the key to eliminating crime. So how do we create homeowners in the city of New Orleans? We got all of this blighted property.
The last mayor that I knew who was on affordable housing was Mark Moria.
Right.
As a matter of fact, him and a team of Vince Sylvan in their housing department, and I tell folk, I give credit where credit is due because the data doesn't lie. They, along with ACT, Joe Givens, housing organizations, it was one of the first times in recent history that home ownership went over 41%. It was a specific push. So we can tout Pennington and 60% reduction in violent crime and all of that success.
That you're a strong part of.
But the Dublin Nord and that home ownership initiative,
all that made
a difference together,
yes, sir.
You're saying.
Yes, sir. And so I'm saying that when we have to invest in people. But until we can invest in people, we have to understand that they are of value. And so because we are afflicted generally, Larry, not all of us, but generally, we are afflicted by this black inferiority complex or the notion of white supremacy depending upon what race you are.
Right.
Until we understand that black people are of value and deserving of an investment and not a fine and a penalty, we are not going to change this paradigm.
Jeff Thomas, I knew we weren't going to have enough time. Look, the lines are lit up again.
Oh, well.
I just got the signal from Lee. that at 8:25, at 8:25 maybe,
oh,
at
man.
8:25 you're going
to
be gone.
Those tickets, man.
You can go and call in and call. And go,
can I call in?
And be the seventh caller. We got two tickets.
Man,
those who folk, if you start calling at 8:25, early bird and Lee Hardy, two great tickets to the Essence Festival. 504-260-9265. The seventh caller, start calling at 8:25. 504-260-9265. Jeff Thomas, how can people get in touch with you? How can they read the Think 504 blog?
Just
one of the best in the business.
Go to think504.com. You can sign up. If you don't already get it, you know, I'd love you to be on the mailing list. It's a critical, it's important, and we don't bombard your mailbox with hundreds of emails a day. We come out twice a week only on Monday and only on Thursday. Occasionally we send out stuff, but generally speaking, we're not going to be bombarding your email box.
And you promised to come back, right?
OT, man, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to
Happy
talk to
Essence
the
Weekend,
WBOK
man,
audience.
And I look forward to seeing you out there, so especially at the Path to Empowerment seminars
there.
At the Convention
right.
Center, man. Second floor, Convention Center, Moria.
Because I said
no one should miss those. When we come back, we're going to continue our
who's
great discussions
lady?
About who's that lady? Who's that lady? We're going to find out after the break.